Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. Today we have Mr. Brian Jennings. Brian Jennings is the president of a Black-owned payroll company called Next Generation Payroll. He is a graduate of a historically Black college and university, HBCU, the big and mighty Prairie View A&M University, also known as Prairie View in Texas. I'm a Texan, it's Prairie View. And he's from Denver. And he currently lives in Dallas, so now he's a Texan. So I'm delighted to have Brian here today because he's going to talk about belief systems about wealth. And it's so important that we talk about wealth because it is one of the pillars, important pillars of empowerment. And we have all these ideas in the African-American and Latinx communities about wealth. And Brian is here to dispel many of those myths and give us some strategies so that we can build wealth in individually, in our families, and in our community. Welcome, Brian. Great to have you today.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you so much for having me today. Thanks so much. I look forward to really getting into this topic and exploring some narratives that really better fit the minority communities, that we serve. So thank you.
So before we get started on you giving us some of these this great advice and strategies, can you tell us a little bit about you and your background and your personal and professional evolution? And just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So, I own the company called Next Generation Payroll. It's a Black-owned business. We've been around going on 4 years. And, in my 20s and also in my 30s, let's say probably around age 27, 28, I realized in the corporate world, I wasn't growing or I didn't have a lot of opportunities for reaching the next level. Growing up, you always were taught that go get your college degree and go get a job and you can move up and you have access to the American dream. But I struggled quite a bit, economically, working in corporate America. And one day, light bulb came on and I said, I have to do something on my own in order to get the growth and that American dream. And so I did launch, my business, Next Generation Payroll. And, going from there, traditionally, I don't have a business background, I have a science background. So I have more of a problem solving background. Like, what is the problem? How can I obtain a solution? And, just over the course of developing my business, I come to find that there are a lot of small businesses that really need a lot of support. And then also in the minority community, there's a greater disparity of minority businesses that have been disenfranchised or lack information. And so I'm on a journey to make sure that I empower Black business, I empower minority business, I make sure that people are going to be successful. And just as a culture, where we're going in America, I want to make sure that's always up and it's not backwards, right? So in order to make sure we continue to move forward as a people, we have to be educated and also empowered.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the services that you offer. You say you're there to support Black businesses. So what type of solutions do you offer those businesses through Next Generation Payroll?
Sure. So one of the core fundamental pieces of running a business would be payroll and HR services, particularly the human resources, the ecosystem of a business, hiring, growing, scaling, delegating, those are all things that are crucial to being successful. That's one facet of it. So if you're able to identify the right talent and you surround yourself with the right expertise, internal, inside of your company, and externally as well, then you're able to obtain the revenue. But if you do not have the infrastructure in place, rules, regulations, policies, you do have to make sure you govern the people that you work with. Make sure you have the culture in place and the rules and regulations, because if not, you know, it's hard to brand. It's hard to retain clients. And so those are, you know, wasted revenue opportunities. Additionally, if you're any business could fail, right? And 50% of businesses after was about 5 years or so are going to fail. And if we're going to provide a service, we have to make sure that our clients do not fail, that you just move forward. And in business, many people always say, hey, it's a roller coaster ride. It's up and down. And, you know, you can, you know, fall and you got to get back up again. And in life, you don't get to do over. You don't hit the reset button. And in business, you don't have the opportunity to hit reset. So you really can't, you know, afford to be on the roller coaster ride, and you really can't afford to fail, especially when you have capital involved and you have your investment and your time involved. You just can't afford to fail. So one thing we do is we actually do provide legal consultations through our lawyer, business lawyer, because you do have to make sure your liabilities are covered or minimized, right? So if you minimize the risk, your chance for success is much greater, right? And a lot of businesses just jump in because they have this dream, right? You know, we're taught that at the end of the movie, you know, particularly a Disney movie, that, oh, hooray, you know, everyone wins and, you know, you're happy, you leave feeling good. But in business and in life, it doesn't work that way. So, you know, you have to be prepared for the worst case scenario. And then the other aspect is the growth of your business and visibility. You know, we have, and I think we can jump into it a little bit. You know, when within the, you know, Black community, we feel like, hey, social media, I want to be seen. And, you know, it's a very small fraction of the people that are out there in the online universe that are looking for services. And I see a lot of times that we're trying to build visibility in the wrong way and with a smaller audience, right? So the biggest platform for online viewership, people in America, particularly the top 15, number one, obviously, is Google. Number two is YouTube. Number three is Facebook. You know, Instagram and all the other social media platforms, they're very far back. You know, you don't want to market yourself where there are less people. You want to market yourself where there are the most people. And online visibility, having a website, having a presence where people can find you. So I tell my clients that, you know, we don't grow you by revenue, likes, and follows. We grow you by locations. We grow you by regions. We grow you nationally. And how we do that is we have a corporate growth strategy for small business through our, you know, marketing channels. And we help people grow revenue so you can compete with Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 100, Fortune 50 companies, rather than being myopic and only seeing just your city or just your state. There's a lot of opportunities out there. So I want to make sure that we get visibility for the small business community.
Thank you for expanding upon your offerings. I'm sure that my audience many could use the services of Next Generation Payroll.
Sure.
So let's go on into our topic, belief systems about wealth. I am excited to have you to talk about that because, you know, we have in the African-American and Latinx communities, this idea, these sometimes very negative ideas about money and what money is and what it can do and this and that. And some of it has to do with, you know, what we learn in church, money is evil. And that's not what the Bible says, and I'm not a biblical scholar, but I do know that's It doesn't say that money is evil. It says the root of money is
says all kinds of evil, multiple types of evil.
Exactly. So,
yeah, right.
Let's talk about that. So you go ahead and tell us about our belief systems about wealth and what your ideas are.
Well, do you want to talk about the church thing since you brought that up?
I'm good with that. I mean, I think it starts there because sometimes people think you're close to God if you're poor. And, you know, it's something about... I mean, that's where I remember learning a lot of understanding about, you know, negative ideas about money, you know, and so we can start there. Let's start there. I mean, I mean, that's a Black church specifically. Now, I don't know about the Latina experience in the church, but I know in the Black church, we got some issues when it comes to money.
Right. Like, you can't be... wealthy and, you know, like a believer, like in Christ. I mean, if that's what, you know, your belief system is like, but like in the Bible, like, you know, there's King Solomon, the wealthiest person, you know, on earth, but God blessed him with the wealth. Right. So why is it all of a sudden we got to be poor? I mean, because, you know, for me, a long time, I didn't really identify with like some of the beliefs in the African American church, like, you know, when you was down and out, the Lord and, you know, and brought you out. It's like, why do I gotta be down and out in the first place? Like, man, I don't want to hear that every week. Like, I'm not coming back to church if you keep talking about me being down and out. Like, why do we gotta talk about all that? Right? I mean, you know, yes, sure, we do. We're gonna have trials and tribulations in life, but, you know, one thing about the Bible, I mean, it's James, the first chapter, like one of the first five verses, you know, particularly talks about if you ask God for wisdom, he'll give it to you abundantly. So that's one, that's probably my favorite scripture, one thing I live by, which is, okay, so if I want to be successful in life, I'll ask God for the wisdom on how to be successful, right? It doesn't mean I'm going to be a millionaire, whatnot, but I can just accept where, you know, whatever I do, I'm going to give God the glory for it. So if I'm going to help someone, and I do, a lot of people say, oh, thank God I met you, right? You know, I'm going to do it for that reason. And I think wherever the, you know, the dice roll, however much money I make, okay, great. But, you know, it's not something that I'm, you know, striving for. And, you know, and I'll bring it up because it popped in my mind. I'm not going to hold back. But in our faith community, tithing, giving to God is associated with wealth, right? Like, I'm going to give 10% of my income and God's going to give me. So when I act and when I give, God reacts and gives to me, which is flawed in a lot of ways. And we can jump into it, you know, briefly, but God, if God is sovereign, no matter what I do, God is always going to do. Like, I cannot interject or act and God responds to my action, you know, when it comes to wealth. Is like, God sovereign? Yes, he is. He's going to do what he's going to do. So if I didn't give, is he still going to do what he's going to do? Yes, right? The whole thing about tithing, specifically, there's some research out there on it. So if you look at Old Testament giving versus New Testament giving, or Old Testament tithing, excuse me, versus New Testament giving, tithing was actually like a theocratic law, right? Tithing in the Old Testament is a law, and it is actually bound to the nation of Israel. And then also the tithe actually went to a very specific place. It went to like Levite priests. There was actually three tithes, right? So when you count up multiple tithes and you have to give, it has a specific place. It goes to the tribe of Levi, right? And there's some tithes for the festivals. We won't get into it for the sake of time. But again, a tithe was a product of the earth. It's like a Leviticus 27 kind of thing, like read the chapter. It's actually a product of the earth. So if you were to tithe today, you got to go own some earth, right? And you have to give a product of the earth. I'm going to grow watermelons. I got 10 watermelons. I'm going to tithe. I'm going to give away one, right, to a Levite priest. Whatnot. You can only tithe until you have 10 of some, 10 chickens. You give away one, you sacrifice you know, one. So, I mean, if you're going to tithe, I mean, you got to have earth or some animals, and you got to give a tenth of that specifically to a priesthood. You know, the other part is like, well, if you don't own land, how does this income thing replace the land? Like, you have to base your tithe off of that. But again, if you want to go into the New Testament, you give freely, right? You can't obey a law, which is a rule, but then give from your heart at the same time. They don't go together, right? I mean, it just doesn't. But that's some of those things. Go ahead.
You know, let's get into it, like you said. Let's go for it. So I have a whole bunch of things to say in response to what you just stated. Now, we're you know, I don't mind saying my age. I'm in my 50s. And, you know, when I was growing up, like I said, being in the church, you know, you were supposed to be poor, money was evil, blah, 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 blah. You're closer to God, you know, this and that. But now we have this whole prosperity gospel. Like, you're not blessed unless you're the way you know you're blessed is what God has done for you financially. And I don't believe that either. I think that there's many ways that God can be blessed. You can be blessed with love, family, you know, home, peace, you know, good health, happiness. So it's not just in financial terms. And as you know, there are a lot of preachers out there preaching the prosperity gospel. But my critique of that is that it's always, most of them center it around how much money you have, or, you know, how successful your business is and blah, blah, blah. And I think there's a challenge with that, even though you can be blessed in those ways. That's not the only way you can see God's blessing. But you're going to the whole conversation. So I wanted to mention that. That's the first thing. And the second and third thing I wanted to mention is about tithing. You know, my parents, you know, since I was very young, I can remember at 7 years old, my parents teaching me about tithing because I got an allowance. And so, but what was different about my parents is that they didn't believe, which I think this might be challenging for some of these church folks, but they did not believe it necessarily had to go to the church. You could give to people in need. You could give to institutions. You could give to organizations. You could give to a cause. And so tithing had a much broader idea than just giving to the church. But I like the way you distinguish between the Old Testament tithing and the New Testament tithing. And then lastly, the third thing is about giving. You know, you talked about, you know, just giving freely. You don't have to give to tithe, but I do want to say this. My mother-in-law called me a couple of months ago and said, send me your address. I want to send you some money. And I said, I don't need that money. You know, I don't need that money. You keep your money and do for yourself, do something. She said, no, I want to give it to you. And I was like, no, I don't really need your money. You know, and she was like insistent. And so I've told my husband, I said, she's insistent about giving me this money. And I know, you know, she lives a very, comfortable life. She could use that money. And so I said, well, let me send her my address and have her to send it. So she sent it. And she testified to me the following week. She got all this money. She said, let me give the way I want to give. That God put it on my spirit to do this. I had to follow it. And look what happened to me. God freely gave to me. So her whole thing is, when you give, you receive. And even though I didn't want it, I also had to be in a very, a place where I could receive it, you know, and I was saying no. So anyway, I just wanted to say that effort to add to what you were saying about giving, about, you know, you give and you receive, but you also freely give and freely receive. It doesn't have to be in the tithing context. But anyway, I just wanted to mention those things.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. you know, that you brought it up, and in the New Testament, it's just all giving. There's no law. We're not under the law, right? I mean, if we start going back into the, you know, the scripture as well.
The pastors are going to get mad at us for saying,
you know, right. Okay. Tell them to reach out to me. I'm okay with it. I'm okay. I'm going to share it on my personal page. Hey, go ahead. You go, come get me. We'll go through the scripture. You know, I didn't write it. So, hey, you can't get mad at me really per se.
So go ahead with your conversation on belief systems about wealth. Excuse me.
Sure. So, you know, we as a whole, as a cultural group, as a minority group, you have to stop looking at it from the microeconomics of just looking at yourself and my own little finances. In my own just, you know, household, but more of a macroeconomics, like look at the big picture, step back. And you have to think about who's all involved in that belief system that you have, right? And how did you inherit the system? Like, are you adopting a belief system that really supports your future generations, or is it just you, right?
Yep.
Right. And then to the source of the belief system, who really benefits? Right.
Yep.
And we just culturally have been bamboozled in so many ways with these belief systems. We're just head over heels over something like being debt free and having financial freedom. Like, who came up with that phrase, financial freedom? And really, who benefits? And we don't benefit from financial freedom as much as you would think, right? We're more hindered by that and the term financial freedom, in a sense. So
can you define that term before you go on for our audience? How are you defining financial freedom, and how are you defining debt free?
So financial freedom, how society views it, is that you don't have any debt. Right, you're debt free and you can be at peace. But really, financial freedom more so actually means that you don't your money works for you, so you don't have to work. You don't have to work as much. You can, you know, kick back. You have generational wealth. That's freedom, right? Not relying on you know, Social Security, for example, as an income source, you're free. You know, if you develop your own wealth and you're independent of, you know, financial institutions like maybe a 401k, you're free from that, right? You own, you know, investments, you own property, you have equity. And when your money works for you, it's a passive income, right? So you're just independent from financial institutions altogether. That's really true financial freedom, right? You know, the freedom that we often believe in actually results in dependency.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes some money out of the next generation. A good example, there's a couple. But I saw some posts on Instagram, and I followed a feed about financial freedom, and my stomach was just turning, and I'm like, oh my God, ouch! Like, I'm just hurting for us because these people are so happy. It's deception at best. Really, that financial freedom term is just straight up deception, right? So here's an example, like, oh, hey, I just went and bought a car cash. Like, oh, I went and bought a Chevy Tahoe or a Malibu or Cavalier, whatever the case is. I paid $25,000, $30,000 cash. I don't have a bill. I don't have a car note. Like, that's not necessarily freedom. You just paid off. You just buried money. If you want to go back to the Bible, like, you're burying your talents. Like, what the heck are you doing? It just gets me up in arms because the reason why it does is that, like, just, you know, a few weeks ago, I was talking to a business broker friend of mine. And he goes, hey, Brian, I got access to something that you want to get in on. And I said, oh, really? You know, let me know. Tell me what I need to get in on, right? So he says, hey, there are companies out there that are starting to sell with the economy not doing as well. They're starting to say, hey, well, instead of selling a share to you, I'll sell you a fraction of a share. And I said, okay. So there's companies out there, example, oil and gas, that industry. There's not a lot of minorities investing in that, but that's where our money needs to be going. Oil and gas. They said, all right, we're going to raise, I don't know, $20 million, right? And we're going to sell, like, instead of a 1% share, that's your buy-in out of the, you know, $20 million investment, 1% of that, you know, that's what you pay. Well, they'll say, all right, well, you can pay 10% of 1%. So that makes it easier and more palatable for regular everyday people to get involved. So let's just say it was like 10 million and basically, you know, fractional shares, like $10,000 or so, right? So for $10,000, you can jump in and invest in an oil well that they're going to drill, you know, and they're going to, you know, pump oil out of it, and you get the return off of it, right? So this particular guy says, hey, man, you know, you get your return in 6 months off your investment. And after that, you're sharing in the profit, right? We pump oil out, oil prices go up, you make more money, you know, goes down, you make a little bit less, but overall, 6 months return on your investment. So you made your money back, and then for the foreseeable future, you're making money. Like, why would you not do that? So I would much rather, I'd be okay with being in debt, but I got my money working for me. I'd much rather have that. And so to say, oh, I paid off all my college, you know, loans, you know, $50,000, $30,000 in a year, 2 years. Well, you really don't have anything to show for that. I mean, that's great that you did that. Oh, I feel good. But what you did was you gave your money right back to someone, a financial institution that already has money, to go flip the money that you had in your possession. So you wasted that opportunity.
So if you could simplify that for our audience. So instead of paying the $25,000 cash for a car, what would you recommend?
Okay, so this is what you can do. If it's a $25,000 car, put a down payment. Maybe you do, I don't know, some number, $5,000, right? So, and then finance the $20,000, right? So instead of, so basically you still have your $20,000 now to do something with for yourself, right?
Thank you. I just want you to, yeah, exactly.
Exactly, right. And specifically for yourself, go invest in, you know, real estate. Get a hold of some of these blockchain, you know, organizations that are buying real estate as a group, like a real estate investment trust. It's a REIT. So basically, again, hey, we got this $1 million project. You know, you put in 20,000, right? So you have a certain percentage of the profit from that real estate development, you know, from the, you know, development of real estate, or whatever the case is, you know, you can partake in the appreciation of the property value. That's all in tribute to the investors. That's a much smarter way to spend money. It just doesn't make any financial sense to do something different, right? I mean, you know, you have to think of it in terms of, let's say it's student loan debt. Student loan debt is, you know, interest rates 5-6%. Let's say 6%. Right? Okay. Or mortgage, same thing. You can apply it the same way. Okay. So mortgage right now, I can get 3-5%. So why would you put your money on a debt that's increasing at 5%? Right. So there's a 5% interest on that, when you can take your money and get 20% return, 30%, 50% return on your dollar, right? It doesn't make sense. So even if you carried the debt, let's say you carried the debt for a longer period of time, you're carrying a debt that's increasing at 5% versus an expense, or excuse me, an investment that's growing at 20, 30, 50, you know, percent. So just subtract the difference. You know, maybe you have a 20% growth opportunity, take that, but carry the 6. So, you know, that's a 14% growth. That's a net difference. Mm-hmm.
That's great advice. So I'm glad that you're defining, you know, in this conversation about giving, giving freely, the challenges of the whole concept of living debt-free, and what it really means to have financial freedom. I think our audience could definitely benefit from this conversation on wealth. With your final thoughts, what calls to action right now would you have for our audience in terms of addressing their belief systems about wealth as well as building wealth in their lives right now? What kind of calls to action do you have?
So, if you're, in a position to accelerate your, the payoff of your debt before you jump and say, all right, I'm going to, pay my mortgage off or whatever that debt item is. Credit cards probably you want to pay off right away. What you would need to consider is that you need to find out the alternative. Like, okay, I can pay down my debt or I can invest in, right? There's a lot of businesses out there, especially like the blockchain, like real estate, or buy the block, those concepts. Look at that first, because you can use your investment to pay off your debt. That's, that's a better way to really look at paying off debt versus just, like I said, spending your hard-earned money, because it's limited. It's not necessarily going to be the best, decision to do that. One thing, people say is that, oh, well, the black wealth is going to go down to zero by 2053, which it's supposedly if we continue down the same path that we're on, then black wealth will be zero by 2053. And there's a lot of ways to inject wealth, back into the black community, which is particularly buying black. Like, you have to be very, very, intentional about where you spend your dollar. So, what you're going to have to do to make changes to build wealth is you have to be very conscious of where you spend your money. And you have to understand, we can't continue to think about yourself when you spend money. And this is what I mean by that, is that instead of going to Walmart or McDonald's or to Starbucks or to, Lowe's, Home Depot, all those companies I just named do not invest in their people the way they should. They invest in stock purchases, but they don't invest in people. So if that's the case, then what we're to do is take our dollars away from companies that don't invest in people. Like, why would you eat at McDonald's and they're suppressing wages of people in America? They don't pay good, right? So you can't say, oh, I'm going to go shop at McDonald's because you're oppressing your people by shopping at McDonald's, by buying their cheeseburger. Go find, a black-owned business, minority-owned business, a local-owned business, and buy their burger, right? Because that money stays within that community, right? And so, that's what, really to help our economics, we are to do.
Great advice. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Brian. Brian is has some great advice on wealth building, and we're going to have him back continually. We're going to make this a series, Brian. You down for that?
I'm down.
So today was just we were just on the surface today, just introducing him, talking about what he's about, what his beliefs are, and trying to dispel some of those belief systems we have in the African American and Latinx communities about wealth building. and giving us some calls to actions on what we can start doing now. But we're going to have you back. I want to have you at least once a month, Brian, if not
once more. A week.
I heard that. And more often. Yeah, we publish this podcast on twice a week, Mondays and Fridays. So
so we
can get you in more often, but we definitely going to have you at least a minimum of once a month. So thank you for joining us today, and I'm so happy to have you. Thank you for this, your first time here, of many, many more.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to the next time as well.
Thank you. Hello, today I have Mr. Brian Jennings, who's going to give us advice on college success. Brian, welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent. Glad to have you. Glad to have you on this call here.
Yeah, so tell me, what college or colleges did you attend? What was your major and degrees? And if you were giving students some strategies for college success, what one piece of advice would you give them?
Okay. So the one piece of advice?
Your schools first, your schools and your
degrees. Oh, schools, yes, yes. So I went to Prairie View A&M University and received a bachelor's degree in biology. And after that, I went to Texas A&M. And got my master's in biomedical science on a scholarship, mind you. So the one piece of advice that I would give to a college student is you go for the A. That is the goal, is go for the A. And how you do that, how you're to be successful in college, is by your planner. The most important tool you have is your planner. So that means you have all your tests on the planner. Like, you know, you're preparing for a test 2 weeks before. It's out. Study daily. That it's a part of your regimen. After class is over, you know, go sit down and study. Go review the material. Because once it's time for the test or you're getting closer to the test, you're reviewing. You're not cramming. Right. So it's a marathon. It's not a, you know, it's not a sprint. It's not a sprint. And again, you know, college is a business. It's about business. It's not a fun, happy time. I mean, you do have the fun, happy times, but it's a business trip, right? Not a leisure trip. So take care of your business on a daily, study, you know, 2 hours a day, every day.
Great advice, Brian. Go for the A. Why would you go for the B or the C? Come on, go for the A. You know, I like that. Go for the A. Mm-hmm. Engage your planner. That means you got to plan and schedule. Use your calendar. And then you've got to act like college is your job. That's what my parents say. College, your job is to go to college. Take it like approach it like a business, like you say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Your job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you get internships and they pay, right? I mean, you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's about landing that job. So get yourself out there.
So thank you so much for that great advice, Brian. Look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.